A colossal monster, a city in ruins, no way out, except inside of the all-electric Toyota CHR. John Cho stars in Escape. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family today. Toyota, let's go places.
Save big on everything for your next project now at Menards. Breathe easier with Best Air Ultimate Allergen Air Filters. They trap large airborne particles to keep allergens out of your home, and they last up to 90 days. Save big on all Best Air products at Menards and refresh your home today. View our selection of air filtration products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
The independent autopsy on Nolan Wells came back undetermined. The pathologist listed seven questions he still can't answer and said he cannot rule out foul play. The DA committed to presenting this to a grand jury once the investigation is complete. But what does that grand jury and what that grand jury actually receives depends on decisions being made right now. That's what we're going to be getting into today. Your thoughts in the comment section and Substack and YouTube. Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, with us as always. And joining us, from what we understand, I'm not making this up, this sounds like something I would pull out of my ass, Jennifer Coffendaffer is joining us from a train in Czechoslovakia. That's a new one. Never thought I'd have that. Jen, welcome. We don't have a visual on her today, but we have her audio if you're watching us on YouTube to talk about this case. So I'm just going to jump into the case. What is going on in the investigation right now behind the scenes as they prepare to present this information to a grand jury? I want to take, opinion out of this, not whether we think anything happened, foul play or not, but if they're preparing information to present to a grand jury, what are they putting together right now, and how long might it take to get that to a grand jury and for an investigation to take once it's handed off? Jen, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is going to take quite a while, and I'll tell you why. It's because they're going to want to go through all the digital information from his phone and from all the friends' phone. We found out that there were about 30 friends that actually went on three separate boats. Well, that's a lot of people to go ahead and get that information about, not to mention all of the witness statements. That's going to include more than just the buddies. That's also going to include everyone potentially that was on that beach. So I see this taking quite a while, and this should all be presented to the grand jury over the course of the GPS information, the autopsy information. Those are the big ticket items.
The grand jury has subpoena power. Obviously, investigators have so much power, too. But what sort of powers does the grand jury have in this case that maybe investigators don't have yet? Is the investigation going to get so far and then start relying on the powers of the grand jury that may go beyond the scope of what they're able to do right now?
Well, no. The grand jury won't have any more powers than the investigators have, but they're dual powers. In other words, you can issue subpoenas through the grand jury, and you can also do subpoenas and get information through warrants and things like that. So you're able to get the same information. It's just through a different avenue.
Is one more difficult to exercise than the other as far as an investigator going to a court, getting a subpoena versus a grand jury requesting it because they're the grand jury and they want it, they get it, basically? I'm just wondering if the lever is easier to pull in one direction or the other when people are trying to dig, especially if you have reluctant witnesses. And again, not to say anything criminal, but because of the way that this case has been going and people not wanting to have their name, in the mix of all the minutiae here and the very high emotions that are flying.
The lever is much easier to pull when it comes to a grand jury subpoena. Mm-hmm. That is a piece of cake comparatively. It's much quicker than, say, a warrant. Mm-hmm. So it is a strong investigative body that has quicker powers to utilize. So that's another reason that a grand jury is a good course of action in this case.
And Jen, how soon do you think, and or the speed of moving from a grand jury to the investigation would it go? Because, I mean, I think there's enough here, both with public sentiment and inaccuracies and just the typically way these things work, that it should move away from the grand jury at some point. I mean, I haven't worked with grand juries on my counterintelligence side. How fast does that process happen?
Well, I think this is going to be a slow one, and I'll tell you why. It's likely that they'll put these witnesses before the grand jury. They don't have to do it that way. They could have the detective that interviews them come and deliver the totality of what each witness had to say. However, consider this. These grand jurors are like having 15 to 24, I believe it is, in Mississippi, super sleuths sitting there. Not all of them, but they're going to be very inquisitive. They're going to want to do a good job. And it's terrible. It's like having 24 defense attorneys coming at you. So if they want to hear from these witnesses, they're going to be able to do that. Can you imagine how long that's going to make the process?
Yeah. And in the cases you've worked in the past, how long does that process take from... Well, typically, do they really need that many people to say that something's a little off? Are they going to want to interview everyone? In other words, because I know, like, when in my investigations, when we were working them in the Bureau, you know, it wasn't a huge high bar for me to move from a preliminary investigation into a full investigation. So I'm kind of, is it the same thing here? Is it kind of the grand jury is kind of like a PI, a preliminary investigation before the full, or is it something different?
Well, it's a full right now, definitely a full in terms of how it's being constructed and put together. The question that I think you're definitely trying to get to is how long in the world is this going to take? And a lot of it is going to depend on that grand jury, what they are satisfied with in terms of the evidence. If they don't believe that the detective, as an example, is presenting the witness statements to their satisfaction, they're going to want to hear possibly from some of those witnesses. So it just depends on what they want.
And is that what the grand jurors themselves are going to be requesting, or is that what the attorneys are going to want, or the judge that's overseeing it?
Well, so the prosecutor and the clerk, they're the only people in there other than the witness and the grand jurors. So okay. A judge won't have any idea what's going on in this case. It will just be those individuals. And the prosecutor has an idea of how he wants to present this to the grand jurors. And he can present it as it comes in. That's what my experience has been. In other words, if you have a return of the subpoena, you don't wait around. You return them. You return it right when you get the what we call a subpoena return. Mm-hmm. So if they do it like that, it should be going along as we speak. In other words, it's piecemealed in. And then ultimately, prosecutor will ask, listen, I want you to consider this for whether there are charges that should be levied or whether they're not. And that's when you're looking at whether a true bill or a no bill would be returned or a nothing bill. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that you always have a true or a nothing bill, but sometimes it just goes before the grand jury and there's nothing there. So the prosecutor doesn't have anybody to ask for probable cause against. That's the third area that is seldom discussed.
So basically it's the entire thing is determined by the prosecutor. He's the one that's going to be, he or she's going to be the one listening to the grand jurors and listening to the evidence that they're presenting. So they're going to be the ones making the final call.
No, the grand jurors make the final call. The prosecutor
themselves.
Strictly decides who he's going to put on and so forth, but the grand jurors can ask. In other words, we need to hear from this witness, or what about this phone, or this wasn't enough, why didn't you go back further, or whatever the case may be, and then the prosecutor has to go back and get that from the detective.
Thanks for explaining that.
Let me ask you this, because we've been talking about people having reasons to not want to cooperate at this moment in time, or maybe just holding back their cell phones from being examined. Not because there's anything to hide on there in terms of anything that happened to Nolan Wells, but because they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, some 21-year-old people who may be involved in activities that are not necessarily legal. per se, drinking, drugs, who knows what else, and conversations that may be not wanting to have someone else to see, or somebody doesn't want their pictures being seen on their phone by investigators. There's a lot of individual reasons why a lot of people may not want to give their phones over to authorities to investigate. Obviously, if you're a friend here, you want the truth to come out, but people have their individual reasons of not wanting to be caught at whatever they're doing. If their phones are subpoenaed, what sort of fear, if any, is grounded in those folks of giving their phones over? Would investigators have any leverage to look at other things on those devices and go after them for completely unrelated charges just because they caught it on their phone? Or if when they're giving their devices over for investigation, are they limited to strictly finding information related to Nolan Wells' disappearance?
No, the answer is no. And I'll tell you, I just asked Mr. Proctor about that.
True.
I'm referring to the Karen Reed case. Yeah. And I only bring that up because I'm very serious that when you have an investigation like this, and if something else comes out, in other words, you're the biggest drug dealer in the county, they can act on that because they had the authority to look at that phone.
Yeah. So, I guess you're playing the odds there. I mean, if you're the biggest drug dealer in the county, yeah, they could probably come down to you. But if it's just, there really is no bar. It's all a gray area. If there is a picture of you drinking and you're underage, if there's a picture of you smoking weed or something, I don't know if it's legal in Mississippi or whatever the hell someone might be doing that may fall under illegal terms. Would they really be going after people for that sort of thing, do you think? I mean, it's a you think question. And if you're the kid, I don't know that you're willing to roll the dice there if you know damn well, you know, you don't have anything that's of criminal nature regarding Nolan Wells on there. But maybe you got a video of him on the island and you don't even know it. I mean, that's some dice that they may have some issues with being rolled.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's why these things are very sticky, Tony, because when you look at it, people want their privacy protected.
Yeah.
They do not want to have to give up information that could possibly incriminate them for something, you know, that has nothing to do with this case. So I think it'll be very interesting to see the full breadth of what people even want. In terms of how many people, is it the 30 people? I mean, at what point do you stop going after people's phones? And the prosecutor and the grand jurors have a huge task here not to get outside of their lane of what's reasonable to ask for.
Yeah, because that was my question, Jen, is like, you know, when we're doing over here, we talked about this on a show not too long ago, where you and I talked about the minimization, because if it's not relevant to the case you're investigating, you can't listen to it, or it's not relevant to anything that the case, basically, right? And so in this instance, even if they're overhearing other potential criminal activities, you know, or suspected criminal activities, whether it's alcohol drinking or drug use or something like that, isn't it? I know you're saying, because again, I'm trying to understand this grand jury process, because again, we didn't deal with it when recruiting spies. Doesn't the prosecutor themselves, so aren't they the ones making the call on what they're going to actually prosecute or not prosecute? So even if the grand jury found something here, it's still up to the prosecutor whether they're going to move forward with it, yes or no?
100%.
Right.
It's totally up to them, and they're going to truly understand the parameters here in terms of what they're really looking at. What they're looking at is this case. Does anybody have information that could incriminate somebody in the death of Nolan Wells? That's what everybody wants to know. And so if in that process, though, you find something that is criminal in nature, it's open. It's open for discussion. So the prosecutor, you just hope, makes a reasonable call when it comes to all the information they could potentially be seeing.
Right. Is it worth it? Is it something that's ever done by a prosecutor to say, look, we don't care about you smoking weed or drinking on your phone, if you're like, whatever. I mean, if there's something beyond that, if you got like whatever that goes, you know, beyond this bar, we're probably going to catch it. But I mean, is it worth saying, look, we're not going to be going after anybody for these sort of things. We need information about what happened to Nolan. We don't care if, you know, you got a Malibu and Coke and there's a picture of it. Is that something that's ever done, or is that just creating way too gray of an area that legally would be a mess?
It's gray. It's really gray, and legally I think would be a mess. And sometimes, and I'm not kidding, I'm bringing this up because this is something that many people know about, is you can expose a bigot. You can expose an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
You could see inwards. I mean, imagine the potential of all of this and why people are going to be concerned. But what they need to do with the subpoenas is be very limiting. In other words, just subpoenas that have to do with, or subpoena information that has to do with what happened July 4th. Mm-hmm. Say at 6 a.m. or maybe the night before, maybe you give it the 3rd to the 4th, and then that's it. And you limit just that information that gets turned over. And that, you know, by doing that, I think you really set a proper limit, and a limit that's going to be approved.
I want to ask you one more thing on this case. Obviously, the independent autopsy, that information has come out this week. We still don't know about what came out of the state's autopsy. That's still behind closed doors as of our recording here. The state retained Nolan Wells' throat, trachea, hyoid bone, part of the lingual cartilage during the first autopsy. The independent pathologist says that is standard when there's concern about compression. So 19 days later, the state hasn't released what they have found. Is that info waiting for a grand jury for further testing or their evaluation, or is it going to be released to the public? What's your take on the fact that that is still being held back and we don't have an answer on it as of this moment? Is it anything, because I don't know, is it of any concern, or is it just part of the process which is going to take some time?
It's part of the process that's going to take time. And I can tell you, they were really smart with this grand jury move, because not all cases get a grand jury, right? They don't decide to utilize the grand jury, and they have here. And in doing that, they don't even have to ask for any gag orders or anything, because they know that they aren't going to release anything to the public before it's going to be seen before the grand jury. Mm-hmm. So you see this kind of cushion that they have in between them to isolate all this information from the public. It's going to go to the grand jury first. And until the grand jury receives it and has a chance to digest it and make some sort of conclusions, I don't think we're going to get anything more from the prosecution.
Yeah, I saw that this morning on the research I was doing, was that, nothing from the autopsies from the government is going to be released prior to the grand jury. It's going straight to the grand jury, like you said, Jen. And also, generally, no, the prosecutor is very unlikely to pursue minor unrelated offenses like underage drinking or anything like that, because they're going to be very specific with the grand jury's instructions.
Very unlikely. But if you're the teenager and you got a scholarship or you got whatever, and that could ruin your next.
Oh, yeah. Fear is always a great motivator.
I mean, I don't know that, I mean, maybe is inspiring enough to get someone to hand over things without a subpoena. I don't know. I mean, to each their own, probably depending on what's all in there. But I mean, hell, even if you don't have anything, you know, so you don't want to like even be included in a circle where somebody might think there is. So hopefully they're able to get the information they need and get the answers that are wanted, wherever this may lead. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to follow this case. We will continue to follow it wherever it may lead.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.